Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everyone? It is Tuesday. Welcome to the Cave Show. This is PLR. Hopefully everyone is having a good day. We got a lot of sports to jump into today. Scheduled on the show today is the one and only Ed Smith, former National Football League MLB star. Has a talk show down here in Arizona on NBC Sports Radio. You should be joining us a little bit later. We are brought to you by the one, the only, Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located in Chandler, Arizona. So at Alma School in Chandler Heights, let them know that PLR sent you, and you can get 10% off of any purchase that you buy, cigar purchase that you buy. Don't just grab your sticks and leave. They can go bad. Become a club member. Get a locker, nameplate on the front, backs up to a humidor. It keeps everything hooked up for you. Sit around, watch about 11 televisions, if I think my count is correct. Last football game does not go off until, or rather they don't close until that last football game goes off on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So you never get put out. Come down, watch your favorite game if you have the NFL ticket. That's Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located on Alma School in Chandler Heights in Chandler, Arizona. Let them know that PLR sent you from the Cave Show, and you get 10% off of any purchase that you have. We got a lot to get into. Like I said, we got the great one, Ed Smith, calling us. Can't wait to get him on the line. Actually, you know what? My button isn't working here, but I think he's clicking in now. You can tell I'm old. Let me make sure that I have this right. I do believe I do. The one, the only, brother Ed Smith. What's happening, my man?
Brother Paul, how you doing, man? Hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
I did. What about you?
All was good. It was hectic, but it was good, man. Got that bird in.
You know, I think most of my clothes still fit, so I'm okay.
There you go. I made it through unscathed, man. I had one plate. Not a whole lot of carbs on there. It was all delicious, and you know, I didn't have to unbutton do the belt buckle.
I just wear basketball shorts, so that way I don't never know anyway. it just makes it easier, and I agree with you. I did have one plate, but as I said to my mother, I'll have one plate at a time, so that way you don't you give everything its proper tasting without having to go through, you know, things bumping and touching and all that. So one thing at a time.
There you go.
So, like I said, this is the one only Ed Smith, one half of the Easy Sports Talk Show, heard on NBC Radio every Saturday at 10 a.m. to 12 here on the Kerry Lackey Law Lab. Okay, so I want to get into this fight real quick. What's funny is you were on the show the last time that the two, Khabib Talib and Michael Crabtree, got into it. And we talked about it then, and we laughed how Michael Crabtree got 100% punked by Khabib Talib. And obviously, I'm sure he didn't necessarily listen to us per se, but I'm sure he's listened to that nonstop. He listened to his boys nonstop, how he got punked, how you just going to sit there and let him take your chain. Are you a grown man too? How are you going to let that grown man treat you like you ain't a grown man? Because Ed, it did not look like that Michael Crabtree had any intention on playing football whatsoever that day.
Nah, he came out there with the intent. The first sign was the fact that he wore the chain again, because Talib already told him, he wear that chain, I'm snatching it. And that's, you know, it happened very early in the game. I imagine that wasn't the initial plan, maybe later on in the game, but, you know, that to me, that's the ultimate disrespect. You know, I don't know too many things that can happen on a football field that would make me go crazy. First off, I wouldn't be stupid enough to be out there with a chain of that magnitude playing a football game. I still, to this day, I don't understand why guys are out there with earrings and gold chains and stuff like that on the football field. But if I was crazy enough to do it and then somebody else was bold enough to basically look me in the face and punk me and snatch my chain, you know, you know what happens out in the street, Paul. Somebody does that to you out in the street, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, you coming right back at him.
Yeah. I mean, that's a code of ethics. I mean, that's, you know, that's street code right there.
Yeah, but you know what? He what's funny is he didn't come right back at him last year. And that's what tells me that it was a whole length of time of people saying, wow, you just going to let him punk you. Because you know how your friends can get you charged up. You know what I mean? It's like, yo, man, we're watching that game, and you can picture it. Friends scratching their cheek, leaning back in the chair, just scratching his cheek with that one finger. So you bite that fingernail, you just going to him, punk you like that, huh? And then you know what they hit you with. I mean, that's cool, but if it was me, that's the one line that gets everybody charged. But if it was me, I wouldn't have it.
Yeah. I mean, those two, you can guarantee, Paul, this isn't the last we've heard from this one. And like you said, it's a little silly, obviously. I would rather have the beef settled somewhere else and not necessarily, you know, hands or anything like that. But on a football field, man, you got to have, you know, even with both of them, they have to have a little more, I guess, self-control in the situation. You know, like I said, if you're out there playing football, it's going to get ugly. And I've been in those situations where dudes try to get in your head, whether through talking or taunting and stuff like that. It takes a special person to be able to walk away from something like that. But we haven't heard the last of this one. They're both going to be a little lighter in the pocket and both getting suspended 2 games. So, you know, maybe that'll slow them down a little bit. But like I said, this one's going to go on for quite a while, especially because they're division rivals. So you can count on them seeing each other twice a year.
Yeah. Well, you know, rumor has it Crabtree had taped the chain to his chest, and that still didn't work. That still didn't work. I know we got a call. I'm going to get to this call in a sec, but I just want to say this. The worst part about it is Michael Crabtree, and I was saying this to Ed Cole yesterday, he's going to bump into Aqib Talib at like the Circle K down in Dallas or a restaurant down in Dallas. And Aqib Talib and Steve Smith are two guys that seem to me that they stay ready on and off the football field. So I don't think if Michael Crabtree bumped into him at the Circle K, it's just going to be like, oh, everything's cool. He might get his chain snatched there too.
Yeah. I mean, every time I think about that, you know what comes to my mind? I think I might have mentioned this last time. Debo taking old boy's chain. You know, my mama gave me that chain. He might – he might get bumped, like you said, if you run into him out there.
Yeah, something tells me Aqib Talib is, I know it's a saying, but he's about that life. Because he has money, just because he has money now, that means nothing. He's still about that life. So he just comes across to me like that. We got a call, and we're going to take it real quick. You are on the Cave Show with PLR and Ed Smith. Caller, who do we have?
Good afternoon, Paul. This is Will.
Hey, Will. How you doing today, buddy?
All right. I got word about an hour ago that the Yankees might be looking. They're interviewing Carlos Beltran for the manager position.
They are. You know, we're going to touch on that in a little bit. But yeah, I'm glad you brought it up right now. Looks like he may come right off the baseball diamond, right into the office.
Done before. Torrey did the same thing. He went from player to manager, and Joe Girardi himself did it.
He did. He did.
Went from player to manager.
Now you two will know more than I would on this one. Did Willie Randolph do that, or did he have a stay somewhere in the middle?
I think he took a brief step away from the game, then came back. I don't think he came into Let's see, he retired, what, 81? I think he came in 83.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good,
yeah.
Sounds good. Ed,
course,
you played professional
baseball.
Yeah, huh? Ed, you played professional baseball. How hard is it to go from player one day to managing the next?
It all depends on the situation. I think what you'll see is a lot of the guys who are like who make extended, you know, who extend their careers toward the end of it, they're almost managers on the bench. It's almost like you're getting an opportunity to do it, even though they don't have the title yet. Somebody like a Beltran, you know, he's obviously at the end of his career here, so he had a lot of time probably soaking up, sitting next to the coaches on the bench. And I'm not saying that disrespectfully; he was just a role player toward the end there. And, you know, he gets an opportunity to kind of be mentored while he's sitting there. So it's like almost like on-the-job training. Those are the guys that it usually works for. And then obviously with your catchers, because they're so involved with the game all the way from start to finish, you know, working with the pitching staffs and stuff like that, those guys usually tend to be able to step right into it as well. It's not an easy – people think you just sit there, you know, as a manager, there's a lot of things you have to learn and understand before you can take over an organization, because you're not just taking over one part of it. You're taking over everything, you know, managing the pitching squad, in-game decisions, whether it be National or American League. So there's a lot of things that have to be taken into account. And I think somebody like a Beltran, because he's been kind of being tutored probably these last couple of few years, he'll probably be able to step right in.
That will be interesting. That would be interesting. He was a Yankee, was he not, at one time in his career?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought he was. Well, he has his, you know what, and he retired at the right time. Look, go out a winner. And if that's the job that he gets, Lou, let me ask you this, though. As a Yankees guy, how would you feel, though, about a guy who has no managing experience, even though maybe he was sitting on a bench getting tutored, coming in and taking over a team that seems like, I mean, everyone said last year the Yankees were a year away. Well, that happened last year. So now the expectations are going to be even higher for what this team can do and will do. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that worries me that, you know, he doesn't have any manager experience. But I guess, hey, we all got to start somewhere. So it can go either way. He knows the Yankees, so that could help him as well. I mean, he did, you know, he was with them for very long, but he was with them, and I think he knows the team well enough that he can manage through them.
You know, it's kind of funny when you said you may as well, you know, you got to learn somewhere. Ed, that reminds me of I should have used that with my parents when I got my first car. Instead of getting a 77 Zephyr, I should have asked for, like, a Mercedes since it's my first car. Why not get the big boy car with the keys and not start with the car with the 8-track and what do they call the seats, that non-bucket seats? When the driver moved up, everybody moved up.
Mine was a 73 Plymouth Fury gift from my grandfather, and I actually had the high beams on the floor, the little push on the floor. So that's how old mine was. And the steering wheel – the steering wheel looked like it should have been on a cargo ship instead of in a car. It's that big, but beggars can't be choosers, though, bro.
Hey, who are you telling? I know. In mine, there was a hole in the gas tank. Couldn't put more than a half a tank in because it would run out.
There you go. That was back when gas was only like 55, 75 cents a gallon, though. We could get away with that.
You know what? That was the perfect date car. I could roll you to the movies, roll you by White Castles, fill up the car, or, you know, half fill the car, and do it all for under $18.
There you go.
That was a lifetime ago.
Yeah, kids today will never understand. We give them a 77 Ford Zephyr. They'll tell us they'd rather take an Uber.
Oh boy.
But yeah,
Uber's
so
out of trouble.
Yeah, huh? So we'll see though, Lou, how that goes down with the Yankees going forward and what their decision will be. I will say this, though. Baseball, the season seems like it gets shorter and shorter. So whatever decision they make, it seems like it's something that's going to have to be decided quickly because, believe it or not, we're only a little over 2 months from pitchers and catchers reporting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So it comes around quick.
It does. A little too quick.
But, yeah, my friend, I'm glad that you brought that up. We were going to talk a little baseball, and hopefully we get you get a chance to hit us up tomorrow. We'll definitely have some more to talk about, especially since the playoff rankings will come out tonight. So that will be our hot topic tomorrow for sure.
All right, because I got some stuff, too, as well.
All righty, my friend. We'll talk to you then.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
All right.
Thanks, Ed.
All right, take care.
You got it. Take care, man.
So, Ed, I know we're talking NFL, but I want to touch on what's going on in Tennessee with the Schiano deal. It really seemed like 200 people with some spray paint, some signs, a rock they could write on, and a bunch of loud mouths actually talked the guy out of a job when he was already – everything was pretty much signed for him to get the job – and get the announcement. Is that what we've come to now with the fan base deciding who the coach is?
Well, that's a lack of backbone from the administration in Tennessee. You know, if you did your homework, you vetted the man. Obviously, he's got a job at Ohio State. You know, they see fit for him to be on their staff. You know, you go out, you do the interview. Like I said, you do your background. If this was your choice, you know, you stick with it. Their fan base is a little disillusioned, if you ask me. They still consider themselves Tennessee from the Manning days, and that's not where they're at right now. You know, whether they had other coaches in mind, I don't even know who's out there. That's like what you call one of those splash names. But you know, I find it very disheartening that one, they go ahead and hire the man, and then they back out, and then how the fan base has kind of sullied his name without any real, what I would call concrete evidence of anything. Like I said, he's been vetted. He has a job there in Ohio State. Just, you know, I don't know what they're thinking, but in the end, I think they're going to get what they kind of deserve anyway. No, nobody's going to want to come take that job after this type of display. You know, where they think they're going from here, I don't know.
You're looking, and you are so right. You're talking about a team that not even the Peyton Manning Tennessee Vols. They're not even the T. Martin who might end up getting his job in the long run. But we're talking about a team that called Cutcliffe, the coach of Duke, and he turned it down. Now, I want you to tell me how far Tennessee has fallen when the head coach of Duke, football coach, not basketball coach, turns down an SEC job to stay at Duke. If that doesn't slap you in the face with reality, I don't know what does.
Well, yeah, it shows you how irrelevant they've become for the most part. I mean, you could run down a number of jobs within the SEC alone that are more attractive than there. And then, like I said, you throw in this caveat of the fans basically turning on someone without him even ever stepping on campus, and that's going to be the environment that you want to go to. That, you know, you're basically on a year-to-year assignment, if you ask me. I wouldn't say if they're willing to run this type of route through their coaching search, you can't go there with any delusions of security. And like I said, who's going to want to take that job, especially somebody who's established somewhere else? And like you said, a Duke of all places, you know, and I'm pretty sure he's secured a little stability there with, you know, and I'm not necessarily calling Duke a powerhouse, but he's made them respectable at least. They're not a laughingstock anymore. But why would you want to go to Tennessee after all this commotion? And yeah, like you said, that's a tall fall from glory. Say that three times.
You know something? I know, huh? You know something, though, Ed? Honestly, I think the SEC is a 4-5 team league now. I mean, obviously you have Alabama. Auburn is pretty good every year. Georgia's pretty good every year. Generally, Mississippi State is pretty decent every year. And then after that, I don't think the SEC, I think they're still living on their own folklore. And I think that some of the expectations for some of those teams are ridiculous because college football is flattened out. I mean, we basically can say You know, I remember a time when they would say the ACC was just a basketball team and it can't compete with the SEC. Well, Clemson has proved that wrong. Florida State has proved that wrong. There are other teams that are now on an equal playing field that have caught up with some of the stuff that the Alabamas, the Auburns, and those other teams do. And I think they're still just living off the name of the SEC. And I know I've been saying this for a while, but I think it rings true now. You can't have your bottom teams consistently be bottom teams and the mind of your boosters think that, well, if we get a coach and, yeah, Tennessee didn't win a game a whole year in the conference, but if we get that right coach, if John Gruden comes here, we're going to compete against Alabama. You're not. The same kids are going to be there.
Well, you know what the SEC has become very top-heavy, and one of the other things I've noticed, Paul, and you probably have too, is like the SEC is full of athletes at the position, you know, the skill position players, you know, always have defensive linemen that look like they should already be in the NFL. They have big offensive linemen. They got the cornerbacks and stuff like that. But if you've noticed, over the past bunch of years, they have not developed any quarterbacks. All their quarterbacks have been, you know, running, slashing, not very pocket savvy. And then you go outside and you go to your USC's and some of the other conferences that kind of have the pocket passes. They've been, you know, and we all know that quarterback position kind of rules the, you know, your organization in the NFL nowadays, and it kind of goes down to college as well. So I just, you know, like the lack of development of quarterbacks in the SEC has always been surprising to me because they have been very good teams at Alabama and Auburn and even LSU if you step a few years back. But name the number of quarterbacks that have, like, come right out of those schools and, you know, gotten right into the NFL or done anything over the last bunch of years. So, like I said, they have all the athletes. They just haven't developed much, and I think that's where some of the other conferences are catching up to them. And that's, you know, like you look at what Clemson did last year with Watson beating Alabama. It was all because of the quarterback position. So I think what's happening is everybody else is developing more quarterbacks, and the SEC is still – in that old school, you know, with all the athletes, but not really supplementing that position.
Hey, you said it very well, because think about it. Odell Beckham came out of LSU, and you can't even tell me who was throwing him the ball.
No idea.
Jarvis Landry came out of LSU. You can't even tell me who was throwing him the ball. You know,
Julio Jones
came out of Alabama, and you know, rumor has it his quarterback was okay, but McCarron still isn't on the field. So until he's actually on a pro field consistently, it's still just speculation. And you are 100% right. And I've always said I love the SEC defenses. I love the way they develop a defense and defensive players and linebackers and tackles, like you said. But you know what? It's a lot easier to beat up on each other when there's no quarterback to threaten you. And that's why when someone like a Cam Newton comes through with Auburn, untouchable. No one in that conference could do anything with them because, for once, you had the game plan for a quarterback that you didn't have a game plan for. But everyone else, they do the exact same thing in the SEC. So if you can stop the run, you can stop the quarterbacks because they're all mediocre.
Look what happened to Alabama this past week.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Against Auburn,
yep.
And obviously another SEC team.
Yep. And think about it. Why? Because the Auburn quarterback can move a little.
Yep.
They don't. No one in that conference defends any quarterback that can move a little bit. They still want those apartment quarterbacks to just stand in a pocket, and that's what the SEC goes out and recruits, and that's what happens. That's why it's getting tougher. I mean, what was it, 2-3 years ago, Ohio State killed Alabama because what? Quarterback moved around.
Yeah, and can actually go to pass the first option. That's the other thing that I look at all the time. You know, like with these SEC quarterbacks, it's drop back, first option, got to run, go. The Auburn quarterback, he showed something this past week. He was going 1 to 2 to 3 and, you know, knew where his outlets were and stuff like that. Those are the type of quarterbacks that just eat those type of defenses up, you know, when you so that, you know, that's a clear picture of that.
Yep. This is the Cave Show with PLR. The one and only Ed Smith on the Kerry Lackey Law Line. Did Todd Graham deserve to lose his job?
Wow. You know, and you're the devout ASU guy, and I'll say this: I didn't see upward motion of the program. You know, he took over a few years ago. You know, and it always happens. You take somebody's players, you elevate for a season or two, and it looks like you're going up the ladder. then for whatever reason, you know, you get your own recruits in there and you either start sliding down or you flatline. And at the very most, I saw flatline from Graham. I didn't see the program taking, like, next steps to, you know, challenge the USC's and Washington's and, you know, the other teams in the Pac-12. And, you know, you have to make a decision. We were going to stay with them and repeat, you know, wash, rinse, repeat, that type of thing. And, you know, I hate to see somebody lose his job, but in the end, I would say it's probably, you know, I would love to hear your opinion on it. I think it's probably a good move for the organization. Now the problem is, who do you find and what direction you go? That's always the issue. But, you know, I didn't see enough forward progress to say that, you know, he was, like, cemented in that position.
You know, when they lost the bowl game, the Cactus Bowl game a couple of years ago, and it was really embarrassing, and I was actually on the field standing next to Rand, and I don't mean, like, directly next to him, but, you know, close enough to him. And the way that ASU lost the game, you could just see the disgust on his face. You know, like, this is really how we lose a bowl game in our own backyard. You could see it on his face. So then last year when ASU lost their last six games and then make a bowl, I thought, well, this is it. You know, this is – if you're going to fire him, now is the time to fire him because you had an embarrassing bowl loss and now you can't even get to a bowl game. But I think when you brought him back this year and the team obviously qualified for a bowl, they beat a ranked Oregon team at home. They beat a ranked highly ranked Washington team at home. They went on a road and won in Utah, which not too many people. And then you won the Territorial Cup for the fourth time in 6 years. I just think that that was enough to show that you had those ups with other people, players, you had your lull, and now you're starting to right the ship, especially for someone who put so much, not just time, but money back in the program. And we got a bunch of kids now that actually go to class and they actually have a GPA. I thought I would have been interested to see, especially since Manny Wilkins is going to play one more year as his fifth-year senior. I would have liked to see what it would be like to get him under this program, same direction, with the same coordinators, one more year, and then change. Because if you're going to mandate that the defensive coordinator and the offensive coordinator stay, but Ty Graham goes, now not only who are you bringing in, because most coaches want to come in with their own people. So now you have to go and get a coach who's going to be better than Graham, but have to win with the guys that you already have in place, with the team you already have in place. To me, it just didn't seem like it didn't make sense to me. Either they all go or they don't go. And so I think that's why to me one more year would have made more sense. Hopefully but because you're keeping everybody else. So what is he doing individually that's stagnating or stopping growth when part of that stadium is part of his money?
You know, very similar to what they did over there in New York with the Giants, where they let Coughlin go and kept everybody else. Like you said, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it seems like a tough job to offer someone where, you know, what Bill Parcells said a long time ago, if he's going to be the cook, he wants to buy some of the groceries. Well, what coach are you going to go out and bring in and say, look, we want you to head this thing up, but you got to hold on to this offensive coordinator and this defensive coordinator because we don't want to change up on our kids one more time. The ones that have been here 3 or 4 years. I mean, what big – that's not a job that big coaches would I wouldn't. If I'm a Sumlin or one of the bigger-name coaches, I wouldn't want that job.
Yeah, the only type of coaches that would be interested in that situation are guys who are getting their first opportunity, and that's not necessarily what you want, you know, if you're trying to elevate the program, you know, right away. So, yeah, in saying that, that makes a lot of sense what you're saying.
So, but it's done is done. I think Graham's shown his character because a lot of times when this happens, it's over. He's agreed to stay on and coach whatever bowl game they get. So, maybe I'm a Graham apologist, but I go back to say if it was last year, I would have said, yeah, you know, you look terrible in the bowl and you lose six games and you don't make a bowl game, I see no reason to keep you on. But if you bring him back, now you got me confused why you brought him back. but you know what? Ray Anderson had the foresight to you know, get Bobby Hurley, stick with Bobby Hurley, and ASU basketball is ranked, which is something I thought I'd never see again in my life. So,
and as a bonus, you got those guys down south who are stumbling, huh?
Oh, you know what? This weekend, other than being with family and Thanksgiving, couldn't have been more beautiful. Watching ASU win a basketball tournament, again, which is something I never thought I'd say, against ranked teams, again, which I thought I'd never say, and then watching them lose three games in a row.
Yeah.
I
thought about you. I knew you'd be happy.
Oh, I watched that game. I acted the fool. As they were beating Xavier, I was acting the fool. My wife looked at me like I was crazy. I was acting a fool, a straight-up nut. real quick, breaking news, Blake Griffin, as reported, has a sprained MCL from his injury last night when Doc Rivers' kid, him and Lonzo Ball got tangled up, fell into his knee. He's going to be out a minimum of 2 months.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
so,
that's the story of his career, isn't it?
And I don't know if you saw it yet or not, but it was a freak accident. He was in the paint, and Ball was going, and those two dove for the ball, and he just got literally rolled up on.
Yeah,
and,
I got a peek at it. He's one of those dudes that's just snake bit as far as injuries go.
Yep. So I think things are just getting worse and worse for the Clippers. Back to football real quick. Tom Savage, what did you think of his press conference? He came in. Is everyone good? Yeah, everyone's good. Good, good. All right, bye. 3 seconds. As your quarterback, do you expect more? As a team, if that was your quarterback, and you know that if he threw for 400 yards and led them to a victory, he would sat there and smiled and answered every question. As your quarterback, do you expect more?
Absolutely. And at this point, you saw what, what's in front of him in terms of Watson, when he comes back from injury next year, he should be good to go, hopefully. Writing is on the wall for Savage. He knows his time is limited there. And at this point, I'm sure he's as frustrated as everybody else, especially after, thinking he was probably going to be the starter throughout the year. But he looks like a hot mess out there. And, but at the same time, you as the quarterback leader of the organization, you have to show a little more class than that. I guess it just shows that, he's not the leader that they might have thought from the very beginning. But that was a hard game. That was a hard game to watch last night, and even with, Flacco, former Super Bowl winner, that's just bad quarterback play on both sides of the ball. But, yeah, Savage, he'll relegate himself back to backup next year somewhere, whether it's in Houston or somewhere else.
And just think, how pissed off was he when Watson took his job halfway through that first game and his agent came out and was mad and everything. And you know what? Be careful what you ask for, because your guy has his chance, and he proved why he got benched halfway through the first game.
Yeah. Think about this, too, because Watson had them to the point where they would probably be a playoff team right now.
Yeah.
Especially as bad as that division is turned out to be. He had them going in upward motion, and pretty much all Savage could do was sit there. And then in the back of his mind, he thought, well, if I ever get my chance again, I'm going to show them. And he's had his chance, and he's looked like hot garbage.
Speaking of hot garbage, just announced Eli Manning's 210-game streak will come to an end because the Giants will be starting Geno Smith against the Raiders this weekend.
No. Are you serious?
Yes.
Wow. Wow, that's a heck of a way to go out for Geno Smith.
He is being benched after 210 consecutive regular season games. Now, speaking of high garbage, haven't we seen enough of Geno Smith to know that that is not why you beat, that is not the player that you bench Eli Manning for?
I thought they would go to their rookie to get a look at him. I Geno Smith, you're talking about, like you said, you're talking about recycled. I mean, he didn't even go through the process. He still smells like he hasn't gone through the recycling process yet. And you got this rookie that you don't know anything about, and you would figure they would give him a look rather than make that. And then the other question is, how salty is Eli going to be walking around that complex this week? Oh.
Yep.
I hope they have 3 or 4 cameras on him during the game. I want to see this.
For the first time in my life, I want to see the Giants game. Because you know what? And last I checked, he has a C on that jersey for captain. So you're telling your franchise quarterback. You know what? The Giants have done – it's funny. For an organization that has built its reputation on being classy, this has been the most unclassy season ever for them. By coaches throwing players in front of the bus. Now you want to bench. Look, you're not going anywhere fast. You have. I think there comes a time where you have to pay respect. Now, I think Eli Manning is not one of the better regular season quarterbacks, but this guy got you 2 Super Bowl rings, and I'm really hard pressed to think that you can't figure out a way to say, well, you know, we definitely want to get a look at this rookie. We're going to let him split some time with Eli during the week. Eli, you know, come second half or whatever, we're going to let him come in and get some snaps too. But how do you let him go out if this is his last year with the Giants, and it seems like it's going to be, how do you let him go out like that after everything that he's done for your organization? For a classy organization, Ed, that doesn't seem classy.
No, not at all. And, you know, you would think that ownership would step in this instance and say, hey, let's not do anything crazy, but you know, maybe McAdoo, he figures he's going out. He's going to burn the whole building down before he leaves, I guess. Because you're talking about taking all the credibility, like you said, of a classy organization and just tossing it out the window. That's what it almost seems like. He's figured, if I'm going to burn it, I'm going to put some gasoline on it before I go.
Why is Buffalo trying to tank their season just to say, we don't want you, Tyrod Taylor? Why are they willing to say, we're not going to go to the playoffs with you, because if we go to the playoffs with you, it forces our hand to keep you one more year. So we would rather tank that than really do that. And just because they go to the playoffs with him doesn't mean they have to keep him. But from what it seems like in their mind, the two are tied together, because they are still yet to announce who's going to start this weekend at quarterback, because they're saying Peterson, I think that's his name, missed 5 interceptions in the first half. They still have more they want to see from him. Have you ever been on a team that would hate their quarterback that much they don't want to go to the playoffs because of him?
I've never seen anything like that in my life, man. I mean, 5 interceptions in one half of football, and you still want to see more? And they keep talking about how, you know, they know he has the skills and this and the other thing. Man, obviously the game was too fast for him in that first taste. You know, if you want to get a look at him, do that in the preseason, not when you're actually in playoff contention. And how much disrespect is that to Tyrod Taylor? I can only imagine. I mean, he cannot wait to get out of there. The only sad part about Tyrod Taylor is, other teams like never haven't like really jumped at him, you know, because I think his skill set could fit in a few different places, but it seems like his options are even going to be limited after this season. But I tell you what, I know he can't wait to get the heck out of there. That's ridiculous.
If you're a player on that team, aren't you looking at your coach, you know, cockeyed too, saying, "Yo, y'all hate him, but we want to get to the playoffs. You're a narcissist."
Yeah. Imagine what they were saying when they went in after that first half of the San Diego game after he threw 5 interceptions. Imagine what those guys were saying just in that half alone, let alone during the week after everything that had transpired. You're talking about losing a team, the locker room, your leaders and stuff like that. Those guys have to be livid about that, like you said, because this is their livelihood, and you want the best people – these are the most skilled people in the positions to help you win. And, you know, it's so obvious that what they're doing, but at the same time, you know, what can you do? You got to ride or die with who they tell you to go out there with.
It really makes you appreciate organizations like New England and Seattle and Pittsburgh, who they may not love who it is necessarily, but they're going to play the guy that's going to get them in the playoffs and give them a shot to win no matter what. And that's why you look at a team like Pittsburgh, three coaches since, what, 1967?
Mm-hmm.
You can name the quarterbacks. There's nothing about them that changes over and over and over and over. There's a reason why every year you look up and you know, Seattle obviously is more recent, but why Pittsburgh has six rings, why New England has five rings in recent history, because you can see why. It's the way that they run
their
organization.
Absolutely.
MVP. I know that the MVP is probably going to go to Tom Brady, who's 40 years old, who looks like he's 25. What my man is doing in Philadelphia is incredible. But I was telling Ed yesterday, it seems like there's a dirt football field coach, offensive coordinator in Seattle, because what he's saying to Russell Wilson is, drop back. If you don't see anything, run around the Cutlass, dash around the Nissan, go back about 10 more yards, run in a circle, and then if you can run for it, go. If not, find someone to complete a crazy pass. How is he not in top three for MVP?
They're playing the epitome of playground football, aren't they, Paul? What he's doing, no offensive line, no real running game. He's under duress every snap, it seems like. And like you said, he's scrambling and finding guys at the last minute and then picking up the first downs with his feet when he has to. He's got to be in consideration. The bottom line, though, is, you know, most of the time they look at the overall win record and they'll tally up the number of TDs and stuff like that, and it'll come down to Wentz or Brady. But, yeah, what he's doing out there is just unbelievable. So, I feel sorry for him. Sometimes you watch him from start to finish, from one play to the next, and it's like, golly, did they game plan anything this week, or did they just say, okay, we're just going to snap the ball and everybody just run and we'll figure it out on the fly? That's what it looks like.
He's incredible. And he's simply incredible. And is there a better receiver? And I know Julio set a record with 250 yards for the third time, and I'm not taking anything away from him. But is there anyone better than Antonio Brown at catching passes, the most difficult passes in the NFL right now, and a guy you know is going to be double or triple covered, and somehow not the fastest, not the tallest, not the strongest, but he manages every single week to have an impact on the game? Is there anyone better?
No, and unfortunately, he killed me this week in one of my fantasy leagues, man. I went in needing him to be quiet, and he scored 35 points and sent me to a loss. So, you know, I hate to even give him props for stuff like that, but dog, strong. Man, here's the sad part, Paul. You know, you go into Sunday, you've already peeked at the score, so, you know, you're just watching thinking, man, just, you know, give him a little, but not that much, and then just slowly but surely, he just starts ticking them off and, like you said, making them crazy plays. And then the run after the catch, man, he's unbelievable once you get the ball to him in open space. And then the other thing is you got all those other weapons. You got Bell coming out of the backfield, so you can't devote all of your attention to him. You start, you know, focusing on the run, and then the next thing you know, there he goes. So, yeah, he's unbelievable. I tell you what, yeah, he killed me.
That catch that he made, dragging that foot at the sideline, honestly, that's one of the top five catches I think I've ever seen, because no one else makes that catch.
People have no idea how difficult that is. Being a tight end, I was in a lot of situations, you know, trying to make catches and stuff like that. You got so many body parts going in different directions. You're coming out of breaks. You know, you got defenders bearing down on you. You got to have sense of where you are on the sideline to get your toes down, make the catch, drag, and then we all know what it means to make a catch now. Nobody even knows what it is. You have to, quote-unquote, complete the process. You throw all those variables into it, man, it's amazing what he does. And, you know, a lot of other wide receivers do, but nobody does it as good as him.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
He continues to put, you know, years like this together. Yeah, I mean, you can't hold him back. I mean, it's just a matter of him compiling – the numbers from here, but he's already pretty much done that. So, yeah, I mean, give him a couple more years and he'll be a first ballot.
Yeah, you know what? I watch him play, and it's hard not to just say, wow, this is a guy I want to pay money to watch, or because I was watching the game and I saw the coverage one time, and I'm not a defensive coordinator by any stretch, but I saw a man cover him underneath. I saw someone over the top, and I saw the safety cheating over to him, which opened up
yeah.
a pass to Martavius Bryant. It's like, if you're going to take up three guys, you've already done your job anyway. Three guys were technically paying attention to you, which opened up a lane for another receiver. And speaking of which, how good of a coach does Pittsburgh have? Because when he came out and suspended Martavius Bryant and said, we're not having this nonsense, we're not having this distraction, he will not play this weekend, we'll just move on with Smith-Schuster, and that's set. Any other questions? How well has Martavius Bryant played now that that one-game suspension is over?
Puts him in check, doesn't it? that's a message. And what it does, it also sends a message to everybody else on the roster. This could be you if you don't get in line. So there's always a hidden message in everything. And that was something that when they did it, everybody thought, you can't be serious. But, yeah, they did it, and they're reaping the benefits of a more focused Martavius from here on out, aren't they?
That's what good coaching will do to you. Maybe they should get that memo up in New York for the Giants, or out in Buffalo. Maybe it's just the state of New York right now. Maybe that's the problem. One more quick one before I let you go. Phoenix Suns. I usually hit you with the text when I'm at the game, and you know, it's watching them is kind of a different thing right now because they don't win very often. From outside looking in, I don't even know how to phrase the question. When you watch this team, is there any signs that you see that you could say, wow, I see this team getting better anytime sooner rather than anytime later?
The question, unfortunately, Paul, is no. And every time I think about the Suns, I'm like, I'm sure Paul could use a hug right about now. Because they just cannot. Well, you remember the movie Life? Remember Can't Get Right? They can't get right, man. I mean, you talk about going through a process, doing this. You know, they fired their head coach three games in. You know, they got some of this young talent, but then what gets me about the Suns, you look about the players they've let go who've gone other places and flourished. That could be your talent. That could be, you know. So, you know, you let a Steve Kerr get away from here, stuff like that. I mean, for me, it's just they can't get right, and I feel sorry for Suns fans for a little bit of time to come, especially because you're in the Western Conference and everybody else seems to be getting a little better year by year, and you keep going the other direction. You know, it doesn't look like there's any light at the end of the tunnel, man.
They have 7 first-round picks between now and 2021. Here's my question to them, and I think it's a fair question. You can't develop that much young talent at once. It's just not possible. You got to have some players in there with the young talent. So I think that you wanted a guy out of town so badly. And there are people on the radio here, on the radio dial, who thought that they should boo Bledsoe when he came back. And honestly, up and down the dial, boo him, boo him, boo him. I think they're idiots. And I think the fans that booed him were idiots. Here's a guy who's been asking you to bring in talent for the last 3 or 4 years, and you didn't do it. You didn't do it. You actually asked this guy. They asked this guy to not play and shut down himself so they could go out and hopefully get a top pick that would be a guard, a point guard, and Lonzo Ball that would possibly replace him. And at no point do you think he would get sick and tired and say, I'm ready to go. Is that a fair? That's what it seems like they wanted. And then everyone comes out and they listen to these yahoos up and down the dial saying, he's selfish, he's selfish. You know what? At this point, yeah, you should be selfish. You're 27 years old. You're about to get into the prime of your career. You're on a team that is not even close to the playoffs. And you shut yourself down to help them replace you. Yeah. Why wouldn't you be a little, when you really stop and think of it, why wouldn't you be a little selfish?
Well,
so
you know what?
Then they
you
get,
know what? You know what? Fan is, or fanatics is short for fans. I mean, they only see what they want to see with the blinders on. But as a former player, you have to look out for your best interest. And like you said, he's wasting the prime years of his career when, you know, when they wouldn't do anything for him. Of course, you know, he's going to want to get out of here.
Yeah, and that's what shocks me sometimes about people in the media saying, well, he's selfish. Well, okay, I tell you what. I want you then, if Mr., you know, you're on the radio down here, I want you to have the company send you an intern, and I want you to train him to take your job. And then you tell me how long you want to stay with that company. It's not going to happen.
Exactly. Nope.
So there's going to come a point where you say, look, I want to leave. So I just look at this team, and I see a guy, a special kid like Devin Booker, and you ran out his point guard. And I'm not dogging Tyler Ulis, and I'm not dogging the Mike Williams or whatever his name is kid. But you traded a guy, and the two guys that's backing him up aren't as good as him. And I think Tyler Ulis is a pit bull. I do. I just don't think he's a starting guard in the NBA. Not yet, anyway. So
yeah.
You have Devin Booker, who's wasting away, right, his talent away. And you don't think that – and he's going to stay with the Suns. He'll re-up because financially it's the thing to do. But you don't think when he turns 24, 25, and that third contract comes along, and you're talking about, well, we still have another couple first-round picks, he's going to say, okay, well, you deal with that, I'm leaving.
Yep.
So
yeah, they're on that merry-go-round, man. This is going to be going round and round, and it's going to be some dark days over there at the arena.
Well, they're back the 7th, and I'll be there with hopes and thinking that they're going to put something together. And I thought it was funny when they fired Earl Watson because he lost two games by, you know, 100,000 points. And I sat there and watched them give up with Earl Watson watching TV. I sat there and then watched them under Jay Triano give up 90 to Houston in one half and then turn around and give up another 70 to the Pelicans in one half. That wasn't Earl Watson.
Ain't time to need a hug, brother. Just holler.
Oh, man. You know, man, tell everyone how they can get a hold of you.
Every Saturday we'll be on NBC Sports 1060 AM, 10 to noon. You can follow us on at edsmithspeaks.com, Twitter at edsmithspeaks, same as Instagram. And just a note, quick note, man, this Saturday we're doing a unique thing, man. We're having a live broadcast from an open house, kind of working with this realty company over in Gilbert, 480 North Mondale Drive, Gilbert, Arizona, 85233. We're going to be in a live broadcast right out in front of the property with a couple of our other vendors and everything there. So we're going to be trying something new, man.
Hey, you know what? Me and the freeloaders might try to swing by because, you know, Gilbert is not far from me. And so I know I'll be with the freeloaders this weekend, as I have every Saturday.
We would love to have you. Going to have some popcorn samples and stuff like that there. You guys coming out. Obviously, I think Big Ed's going to be over, too. He's thinking about coming out.
Oh, cool. Well, you know, they start their, not this Saturday, but next Saturday, they start their basketball schedule on me. So,
okay.
So, and then 2 weeks after that, they start their Friday night light football schedule. So, I don't have a life anymore.
Boy, keeping you busy, man.
Oh, man, and they still have yet to pay for anything. Yet to pay for one thing. They create the menus. They go in they come in the house and they turn lights. The light switch and lights pop on. They go to the fridge. They open the door. It's all there. And all I get is the same phrase over and over. Dad, can I? Either can I do this or can I have this?
Here's the sad part, Paul. It only gets worse as they get bigger and can eat more and need more. You know that.
I don't know. I don't know how they can eat more, and I don't know how they can do it. Paul Jr. ate 15 nuggets the other day. The kid, that doesn't gain an ounce.
Well, I tell you what, that brings back memories. I remember when me and my brother could put down two Big Macs, large fry, apple pie, and be looking for our shake to chase it all down.
You know, I asked my guy, AG, who owns, you know, a couple barbershops. I said, when they get 11, you're going to have to put them to work. They got to come down here and do some sweeping. They got to do something.
Sweep some floors,
they can't just look at me. Because if they look at me all day when they get 12 and 13, I'm going to get upset. Don't just look at me in my face. That I won't have. You can look at your mother, but don't look at me. Because if you ever make it in a league or whatever, you're going to say hi, Mom, anyway. And you're not going to say hi to me. I'm the one out
there
throwing the passes, running down the field. You ain't going to say hi to me. You're going to say hi to your mother. So you know what? Look at her all day.
I'm already getting Quentin in. We do the drill, man. He's got to throw me in there somewhere. When he runs around the house on Sundays, and I'm already prepping. You gotta say hi to Dad too.
Something, just a wave. I told Paul Jr. I said, you know what though? I know how you're gonna say hi to me. I'm gonna make you put a Jr. after your name on all your jerseys.
There you go.
That way they know there's a senior out there somewhere. And when you buy your mother's a house, hopefully she'll let me live in it, and I could be just as happy.
Hey, we ain't asking for much, Paul. We ain't asking for much.
I'm not. I just, like I said, as soon as that 11-year-old birthday come, I'm putting them in the car, driving them right over to the barbershop and handing them a broom.
Yeah, we were leaving yesterday. I picked a little dude up yesterday. He was talking to one of his friends, talking about this is my truck right here. I said, when the last time you made a payment on it? This is my truck right here. I was like, well, yeah, huh? What you got on that note?
Yeah, that's the way they are. They claim it all. He told me. Told him he couldn't play his Xbox. He goes, but Dad, it's my Xbox. I said, you didn't buy that Xbox. I take that back. You did work hard to save up your money and give money on it. I said, I'll give you that. But when was the last time you paid the electricity that Xbox get plugged into?
Thank you.
Well, Dad, that don't count. Okay, well, then I tell you what. I'm going to unplug it, and you tell me how the games work.
Old school. Give it to him, Paul.
Oh, man. It's you know, I don't lose hair, but it's gray.
It's gray.
I don't even have salt and pepper no more.
Well, at least you got something up top, man. I let it grow a little too long because last week I was on the road and gave it a couple extra days, man. I had that George Jefferson start to come in, so I had to get it off.
All right, my brother, remind him again. 10 to 12 on Saturday. Where are you going to be at again?
Hey, we're going to be over at 480 North Mondale Drive, Gilbert, Arizona, 85233. Come on and check us out, man.
You got to get down there. It's one of the best shows. Hey, my brother, I really appreciate you coming on today and hanging out, especially for so long today.
Anytime, brother.
All right, then. See you Saturday, for sure.
Okay, sounds good. I'll send you the info. All right, Paul.
All right, sounds good. All right, cool. I'll talk to you later. That's the one, the only Ed Smith on the Cave Show on the Carrie Lackey Law Line. Like you said, you can hear him every Saturday from 10 to 12, NBC Sports Radio down here. Easy sports talk show. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us today. This is the Cave Show. This is PLR. Make sure you follow us on social media on Instagram, Twitter, and the Facebook fan page at The Sports Cave. Make sure you're on following us on the website, thesportscave.com. Cave is always with a K. You can get me directly at PLR on Sports, and that's on Twitter. Appreciate callers calling in. My man Lou, thanks for calling in today. Until tomorrow, everyone take care. Have a good night. We will be talking college football tomorrow. We do have a guest tomorrow. I'm just waiting on the confirmation. Once I get that, it will be on Twitter. Thursday, we have the one and only Kiara Luck calling in. And then on Friday, we have Kyle Fleegs calling in to talk hoops with us. So until tomorrow, everyone take care. Have a great night. This is PLR. This is Cave Show.
Just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, I'm that star up in the sky, I'm that mountain peak up high, hey, I made it, I'm the world's greatest, and I'm that little bit of hope. when my